False Evidence of Evolution, Part 2. In the first film in our False Evidence of Evolution series, we saw some of the fake evidence evolutionists produce as part of their effort to keep their theory alive. We witnessed how the theory of evolution has been refuted by science at every step, and how it is a deception maintained by means of various frauds in order to cover up the fact of creation. In this second part of the series, which unmasks the true face of the theory of evolution, we shall continue to examine the hoaxes perpetrated by some evolutionists. We will learn with horror how laboratory experiments performed by evolutionists in order to bring an evolutionary explanation to bear on how life first emerged have ended in fiasco, how they have manufactured fake fossils by sticking together the fossil bones of living things that existed at very different times, how fishermen caught living specimens of the coelacanth, which evolutionists claim to be a so-called intermediate form, half fish and half reptile, in the transition from water to land, and the ridiculous position in which evolutionists found themselves when it transpired to be nothing more than an ordinary species of fish, how they misled the public by exhibiting an imaginary fossil they made from plastic bones, depicting it as an intermediate form in museums for some 100 years, how they added fraud to barbarity by kidnapping an African pygmy and locking him in a cage in American zoos, displaying him as supposed living evidence of evolution. Evolutionists generally point unwisely to the Miller experiment as a so-called evidence for their deceit regarding how what they refer to as primordial life emerged on Earth spontaneously. The fact is, however, that this experiment performed around half a century ago lost all credibility in the face of subsequent scientific discoveries. In 1953, the American chemist Stanley Miller performed an experiment in order to support the scenario of molecular evolution. Miller assumed that the primordial atmosphere consisted of methane, ammonia, and hydrogen gases. He combined these gases in an experimental apparatus and passed an electric current through the mixture. A week or so later, he saw that a few amino acids had formed in that part of the apparatus known as the cold trap. This caused enormous excitement among evolutionists. Over the next 20 years, certain evolutionists such as Sidney Fox and Cyril Penompouruma attempted to continue with Miller's scenario. Discoveries made in the 1970s, however, invalidated all these evolutionist endeavors known as the primordial atmosphere experiments. Because scientific findings showed that the primordial atmosphere on Earth did not consist of the gases methane and ammonia, as Miller had hypothesized, but of nitrogen, carbon dioxide, and water vapor. Miller had carefully selected the gases he used in his experiment because these were ideally suited to the formation of amino acids. However, the structure of the atmosphere in the primordial world was very definitely not suited to the emergence of amino acids. It was also realized that there was a high level of free oxygen in the primeval atmosphere. This invalidated the evolutionist scenario, because it was obvious that free oxygen would immediately break down amino acids. Moreover, Miller intervened in the experiment through various conscious mechanisms, such as the cold trap, by way of which he was able to isolate the amino acids that formed before they could be broken down again. Were it not for equipment such as the cold trap, a source of sparks and other chemicals that emerged during the course of the experiment, the amino acids that appeared would have immediately broken down again. In this way, Miller himself destroyed the evolutionist hypotheses regarding amino acids being able to form spontaneously under natural conditions, because there was no such controlled mechanism, as evolutionists claim, in the primordial world capable of separating amino acids that might form before they were broken down. In conclusion, far from documenting that life could emerge spontaneously in nature, all these efforts actually showed that it could not even be produced under laboratory conditions. In the light of these findings, in the 1980s, the scientific world admitted that the Miller experiment and the primordial atmosphere experiments of those who came after him were actually meaningless. After a long silence, Miller himself confessed that the experiment he conducted in 1953 was a far cry from accounting for the origin of life. The evolutionist and scientist Harold Urey, who performed the experiment in question together with Miller, made the following admission. "All of us who study the origin of life find that the more we look into it, the more we feel it is too complex to have evolved anywhere. We all believe, as an article of faith, that life evolved from dead matter on this planet. It is just that its complexity is so great, it is hard for us to imagine that it did." The 50 years or so that have passed in the meantime have served only to better display the hopeless position of the theory of evolution at the molecular level. Yet, it is a most interesting fact that the Miller experiment is still depicted as if it is a scientific evidence for evolution in a great many biology textbooks. An article published in National Geographic magazine in 1999 announced the discovery in China of a fossil known as Archaeoraptor. The report contained evolutionist indoctrination along the lines of, "In the same way that we can be certain that human beings are mammals, so we may be sure that birds are theropods." Theropods are a kind of dinosaur, and the fossil discovered was depicted as definitive proof of the idea that birds evolved from dinosaurs. This species, which was said to have lived around 125 million years ago, was given the name Archaeoraptor leongensis. Fictitious illustrations in the magazine depicted dinosaurs covered in feathers, leaping into the air and then beginning to fly by growing wings. Yet this fossil, announced to the accompaniment of great fanfare by National Geographic, soon turned into a source of terrible embarrassment for the magazine, known for its pro-Darwinist stance. In fact, the fossil did not belong to a species exhibiting both bird and dinosaur characteristics, as National Geographic had claimed. Although the fossil had a beak with teeth and a bird-like body, its tail resembled that of a dinosaur known as the dromaeosaur. The fossil was actually a hoax. It had been deliberately assembled from more than one fossil in such a way as to give the impression of representing a supposed intermediate form and used as evidence for evolution. Evolutionists had learned nothing from the Piltdown Man affair, in which an orangutan and human bones had been assembled together, and this time portrayed a hoax fossil put together from dinosaur and bird bones as proof of evolution. Thank you. fossil fish belonging to the coelacanth class were once depicted as powerful evidence in favor of the myth of the transition from water to dry land. Based on the fossil remains of this animal, evolutionist biologists suggested that a primeval lung had developed inside the creature's body. This lie was described in a wide range of reference sources and illustrations showing the coelacanth in the process of emerging from sea onto dry land were even published, and all this was based on the assumption that the creature was extinct. However, a most interesting discovery was made in the Indian Ocean on 22nd December 1938. A living specimen of the species Letamyria, a member of the coelacanth family, depicted as an extinct intermediate form that had lived 70 million years ago, was caught in the open sea. The discovery of a living coelacanth came as a huge shock to evolutionists. The evolutionist paleontologist J.L.B. Smith announced that he could not have been more surprised if he had come across a dinosaur in the street. More than 200 coelacanths were to be caught in other regions in the years that followed. With the capture of these fish, it was realized that all the speculation regarding these animals was unrealistic. Contrary to what had been suggested, the coelacanth had neither a primeval lung nor a large brain. The structure that evolutionists imagined to be a primeval lung was nothing more than an oil sac in the fish's body. Moreover, the coelacanth, depicted as a reptile to be preparing to move out of water and onto land, was seen to be a bottom-dwelling fish living in the deepest parts of the ocean and almost never rising above 180 meters in depth. At this, the popularity of the coelacanth in evolutionist publications immediately disappeared. The evolutionist paleontologist Peter Forey made the statement in an article in Nature magazine. The discovery of the Letamyria coelacanth raises hopes of gathering direct information on the transition of fish to amphibians, for there was then a long-held belief that coelacanths were close to the ancestry of the tetrapods. But studies of the anatomy and physiology of the Letamyria have found this theory of relationship to be wanting, and the living coelacanth's reputation as a missing link seems unjustified. Thus, the most frequently used supposed intermediate form between fish and amphibians in the propaganda of evolution was utterly discredited. The Neanderthals, portrayed as the primitive ancestor of man by evolutionists, has been definitely shown to be a lost human race. The Neanderthals were human beings who appeared suddenly in Europe around 100,000 years ago and vanished just as suddenly and silently 35,000 years ago, or else became assimilated with other races. The only difference between them and the modern man is that their skeletons were slightly stronger and they had slightly larger skulls. Neanderthals were a human race, and this is now agreed by just about everyone. evolutionists made great effort to depict these human beings as a primitive species. But all the discoveries made showed that the Neanderthals were no different to a well-built person walking along the streets today. The Neanderthals most closely resemble the Eskimos living in the cold climates today. Discoveries have shown that the Neanderthals buried their dead, made musical instruments of various kinds, and shared a highly developed culture with humans. The New Mexico University paleoanthropologist Eric Trinkos, regarded as an authority on the subject, writes, "Detailed comparisons of Neanderthal skeletal remains with those of modern humans have shown that there is nothing in Neanderthal anatomy that conclusively indicates locomotor, manipulative, intellectual, or linguistic abilities inferior to those of modern humans." Today, however, scientists and researchers agree that the Neanderthals were nothing more than now extinct human race. Thus, it was that another false proof that evolutionists for years attempted to depict as a link in the supposed evolution of man vanished from the scene. Evolutionists looking for imaginary half-ape, half-human fossils did not regard backing their theory up with fake fossils alone as at all adequate. They also imagined that they might be able to find living specimens of the evidence they needed in various parts of the world. The result of the frantic endeavors evolutionists made in order to find living proof of evolution once more unmasked the fanatical devotion they felt for their theory. Evolutionists would stop at nothing in order to find evidence, but their next move was to be far more barbaric than those that had gone before. The barbarity committed by an evolutionist researcher by the name of Samuel Verner in 1904 came about as the result of his search for living evidence in the Congo. Verner captured an African pygmy known as Ota Benga, a married man and father of two children, whom he depicted as evidence that human beings had evolved from apes. Despite being a human being, Ota Benga was chained like an animal, kept in a cage, and taken to America. On his arrival in America, Ota Benga was put on display in a cage with various species of ape at the St. Louis World Fair. Ota Benga depicted as if the closest intermediate form to man was transferred to the Bronx Zoo in New York 2 years later. There, he was put on display as the so-called ancestor of man alongside a gorilla called Dinah and an orangutan known as Duhang. Evolutionist publications immediately began carrying articles about Ota Benga. Thousands of people flooded to the zoo to catch sight of Ota Benga, who was treated savagely just like an ordinary animal. The director of the zoo, the evolutionist Dr. William T. Hornaday, made a number of speeches describing his pride at having a supposed intermediate form in his zoo. Ota Benga eventually killed himself. This event is significant in revealing the irrational and unconscionable practices that Darwinists might resort to in order to pursue the lie of evolution. despite their abysmal failure when it comes to finding any scientific evidence with which to support their theory, evolutionists are still remarkably successful in one sphere: propaganda. The most important component of that propaganda is the fake illustrations known as reconstructions. The word reconstruction is based on the concept of rebuilding and is the production of a picture or model of a living thing on the basis of nothing more than a fragment of bone and a large amount of imagination. All the ape men that so often appear in newspapers, magazines, and films are in fact imaginary reconstructions. Inspired by fossil remains, these reconstructions are designed and produced entirely with the aim of supporting the claims of the theory of evolution. They are totally divorced from reality, however. The aim behind this is to use picture or models to convince people that the imaginary life forms concerned did actually exist at one time. It needs to be made crystal clear here that only the very general characteristics of a fossil can be established from the bone remains. It is impossible, on the basis of these bone remains, to draw any conclusions regarding the physical appearance, skin, muscle tissue, facial lines, nose, ears, eyes, hair, and similar features of a living thing. The fact is that the details that really determine physical appearances are the soft tissues that gradually vanish over the course of time. Ernst A. Houghton from Harvard University describes the position by saying, "To attempt to restore the soft parts is an even more hazardous undertaking. The lips, the eyes, the ears, and the nasal tip leave no clues on the underlying bony parts. You can, with equal facility, model on a Neanderthaloid skull the features of a chimpanzee or the lineaments of a philosopher. These alleged restorations of ancient types of man have very little, if any, scientific value and are likely only to mislead the public. So put not your trust in reconstructions." Evolutionists even go so far as to attribute very different facial appearances to the same skull. One well-known example of this is the three completely different illustrations produced of the fossil known as Zingiranthropus. Evolutionists pick up their paintbrushes and draw imaginary creatures, thus try to produce false evidence for their theories, which are in fact devoid of any scientific proof. In reality, however, there is absolutely no concrete fossil evidence to substantiate the image of the imaginary ape man that so frequently appears in evolutionist publications. The way they resort to such imaginary reconstructions is an important indication of evolutionists' utter failure to find any real evidence. One of the most important difficulties facing evolutionists as they seek to keep Darwin's theory alive and well is the absence of any fossil that can possibly be portrayed as an intermediate form. Ever since the theory of evolution was first proposed, despairing evolutionists have many times resorted to producing their own fake fossils. Yet these efforts have always ended in utter failure. One such instance was a fossil exhibited for 116 years as a supposed intermediate form in the Museum of Wales. In 1884, an evolutionist collector by the name of Samuel Allen donated an intermediate form supposedly proving evolution to the Museum of Wales. Museum officials imagined that this fossil, given the name Ichthyosaurus, was a perfect example of marine reptiles. In 2000, the fossil had to be removed for general maintenance, during which time it emerged that the fossil was a fake. Yet hundreds of thousands of people who had visited the museum in the meantime had been convinced that the fossil represented evidence in favor of the theory of evolution. A report published in BBC News Online on December 8, 2000, announced this fossil, which had been displayed as supposed proof of the evolution for 116 years, was actually a hoax. The dolphin-like creature in question had actually been produced by putting two different marine creatures together. Experts revealed that the skull and bodies had actually been buried in two different types of rock. The skull belonged to a species known as Ichthyosaurus communis, and the body to another sea creature by the name of Leptonectus phanerostris. Other bones had been made from plaster and stuck inside the rock in order to give the impression that they were genuine, and one of the fins were also a fake. Yet for some reason, just like this one, every fake fossil alleged to constitute evidence for evolution has been displayed for years in museums. Another feature these fossils have in common is that nobody has confirmed whether or not they are genuine. Museum conservator Dr. Caroline Butler reports that despite her many years in the profession, she has never come across such a thing happening and that it was a complete forgery. When the plaster started crumbling and we stripped off 5 layers of paint, we found it was an elaborate forgery. It was an amalgam of two different types of ichthyosaurus, plus a clever attempt at fake parts. Over the course of more than a century, hundreds of thousands of people were deceived by a hoax fossil manufactured by evolutionists. Yet this was neither the first nor the last of such evolutionist frauds. Ever since the time when the theory was first launched, the absence of any evidence to support it has been a major factor propelling, encouraging evolutionists to commit such frauds. In this series concerning the false proofs of evolution, we have seen how Darwinists have had no qualms about resorting to all forms of deception and fraud in an attempt to prove in their own eyes their lies true. We have witnessed how evolutionists, who will stop at nothing in order to achieve their aims, have produced fictitious illustrations, carried out misleading experiments, have deliberately distorted the fossils and skulls they have discovered, deliberately altered the fossils in their possession, adding to some and concealing others, and even placed a human being in a cage in order to provide evidence in support of their theory. Evolution is a theory whose scientific mask has now fallen, a deception based on brainwashing, propaganda, and fraud. There is only one aim behind the efforts to prop up a theory so far from being scientific, that puts forth the lie that all things, living or otherwise, human beings, animals, plants, the Earth, the Sun, the galaxies, in short, the entire universe emerged as the result of chance. That aim is to provide a supposed scientific foundation for the materialist and atheist system that denies Almighty God and His creation. The fact is, however, that modern science has shown that it is impossible for a single living thing, or even a single protein molecule in it, let alone the universe itself, to have come into being by chance. Everything large or small around us, visible to us or not, every animate and inanimate thing emerged to the creation of Almighty and Omniscient Allah, Lord of all things. This reality, which only believers possessed of reason and conscience can truly understand, is revealed as follows in the verses of Allah. I seek refuge in Allah from the accursed Satan. Allah is He who splits the seed and kernel. He brings forth the living from the dead, and produces the dead out of the living. That is Allah. So how are you perverted? It is He who splits the sky at dawn, and appoints the night as a time of stillness, and the sun and moon as a means of reckoning. That is what the Almighty, the All-Knowing, has ordained. It is He who has appointed the stars for you, so you might be guided by them in the darkness of the land and sea. We have made the signs clear for people who have knowledge. It is He who first produced you from a single self, then from a resting place and a repository. We have made the signs clear for a people who understand. It is He who sends down water from the sky, from which we bring forth growth of every kind. And from that we bring forth the green shoots, and from them we bring forth close-packed seeds. And from the spades of the date palms, date clusters hanging down. And the gardens of grapes and olives and pomegranates, both similar and dissimilar. Look at their fruits as they bear fruit and ripen. There are signs in that for people who believe.